flying, then statistically it demonstrated non-significantly that it caused more deaths than no treatment. So the azithromycin and the hydroxychloroquine is at best anecdotal. The few test results are not terribly useful and requires more. Cancers are stuck together in one subject, but they are really more than 100 different abnormalities, and the concept that one solution fits all is usually what you see down in Mexico clinics, apricot pits, and other things. I realize that there is this idea that big pharma and big medicine and big doctors are hiding cures from everyone because we're making ridiculous sums of money treating them the old way that kills them all. But I assure you, if that was the case, at the very least, doctors wouldn't be dropping dead of cancers, which they are. And pharmaceutical presidents wouldn't be dropping dead of cancer. It's a nice, easy solution that some guy working in a lab someplace has the magic lodestone turns lead into gold, but usually that isn't the case. When someone supplies you with a solution that sounds too good to be true, it's too good to be true.
Well, Roy, that means that any pharmaceutical company that comes out with any drug that claims to kill cancer, you know, that could be too good to be true, too, you know? And the thing is that, you know, look, if someone's sick, I mean, they're going to try anything to be well. I mean, if they have a death sentence, don't you think it's worth a shot to give something that is unorthodox or out of the orthodoxy to you know, really to try to get well? I mean, what do you feel about the alkalinity subject, Dr. Roy?
Yeah, I totally disagree with that on so many interesting levels. It's sort of that the people who are talking about this don't really know about acid-base balance in the human body. We're kind of your pH. You know, you'll either urinate out the bicarbonate of soda or hold it in, depending upon what you're taking in, be it an acid or a base. We're designed and optimized for a certain pH level. If you take it too far out, and people do, they have diabetic ketoacidosis, in which they're flooded with acid to the point where their body can't autocorrect and they go into coma. Alkalinity isn't good either. It's a simple approach to say, all you have to do is change pH and everything will act the right way. There's that, unfortunately. It's not as simple as a pH meter. That isn't what causes chromosomal abnormalities in some forms of cancer and other causes of cancer. Again, it's not a single disease. It's over 100 different diseases treated in different ways, using different medications and different treatments, and short of something like a genetic engineering in which it's going to be a custom-made solution, I don't see any magic bullet that's going to cure everyone. I hope I'm wrong. I see no indication that I am, but...
Well, thank you very much, Doctor. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Roy, on your opinions. I personally don't believe that the medical association has all the answers. There are simple approaches to certain things, and, you know, I see a lot of research with genetic engineering and things like that, and I just think that they may be opening up a can of worms, or they have a different motive for doing so. I believe that a lot of diseases can be fixed or remedied with some simple solutions. I know that goes against the Orthodox. It's unorthodox, but the thing is, I don't know. They don't have the answer now, as far as, and people are dying. I just say, personally, that if me or anyone else had that type of thing, I would try anything to be well, you know? Have a good night, and thank you for your comments.
You're welcome, but as a closing statement to this particular portion of the subject is, there are a lot of strange ideas that people have. If you tried all of them simultaneously, no doubt you would die of all kinds of complications. And I mentioned the story earlier of a couple, I think it was in Arizona, who decided to self-medicate themselves just in case. And the husband's dead, and the wife's in intensive care. Things are not all totally harmless. And I realize that if you're in very serious condition, you won't say anything. You can't just irrationally just go for broke and try any old thing. Because sometimes the attempted cure is worse than the disease. I don't want to use that other phrase that was used recently. But I certainly understand desperation, and a lot of people have made more than a couple of bucks in Mexican clinics offering cures for cancer to people based on all kinds of questionable logic and no proof. And you can understand why people would travel out of the country and give someone their entire life savings for the random chance that these guys are not crooks and thieves and scoundrels, but men of science who are misunderstood. Usually, they're crooks and scoundrels.
Well, I know what this is. WQHL. I know this third party. I know this has nothing to do with the coronavirus. But I was speaking to a friend of mine. He seems to be very knowledgeable on the subject. And the AMA has passed, and the pharmaceutical companies have passed this Lipitor, right? Now, this guy was a diabetic, and I gave him something, some information from a Dr. Wallach that's on the Dr. Wallach it was, and he claims that genetically, that's not the way to go with going after, to cure diseases. But one of my friends said he wouldn't even take this Lipitor. Now, that was passed by the pharmaceutical company and the medical association. And actually, Lipitor has killed more people than the disease that it was intended for.
I'm not particularly sure of your math there. I mean, again, if you got a legitimate source for that, please email it to me, and I'd love to take a look at it. Medicine's ability to deal with cardiovascular disease is problematic. There's a lot more, my gut feeling, risk of heart disease than simple high-density lipoproteins and low-density lipoproteins. There are probably other factors afoot, and they're just trying to do what's available as best they can. I don't know what your guy suggests. I'm sure that Lipitor doesn't have that degree of danger, otherwise the FDA would not keep it on register, and it would go from black label to completely disallowed. So I'm not quite sure of the numbers. Medicine can certainly get better in their cases of treating arteriosclerotic heart disease. We have stents. We have different drugs to lower cholesterol and raise the good cholesterol and lower the bad and block triglycerides and other type of things. And then you have charlatans who have this thing about calcium chelation and put bags of a chelating solution and tell people that this is going to reverse their heart disease, which, again, no one bothered to study because when they did study it, it didn't really work, so they stopped studying it, but these guys still do it. So you pay your money, you take your chances, as the saying goes.
Well, I mean, you know, you seem like you know what you're talking about, but I believe that all in all, the Medical Association has been propagandized way back. I believe that the Rockefeller Institute really started off with these medical schools. So I believe that there's a book that you can read. It's called Dead Doctors Don't Lie by this Dr. Wallach. And it makes a lot of sense. I think the Medical Association really complicates things because they know that people are in the dark. They're like in the dark ages as far as medicine goes, because they don't study that. They don't delve into that information. They're involved in everyday life, working in different fields, stuff like that. So, I appreciate your input. You definitely it's eye opening. But I'll see if I can email you this guy's website. I forget the guy's name, but it was Mutato. If you Google that, you may be interested in checking out that information. But that doctor in Israel came up with it, and he's not interested in making money or making a name out of it. He said that. He said, I'm more interested in getting people healed and remedying cancer. So it might be worth checking into. You know, but the name of that book is Dead Doctors Don't Lie. And so, you know, the big pharma industry in cahoots with the Medical Association has become a real profit motivated industry. And there are a lot of people. There's a lot of criminality in this type of organization. But anyway, I appreciate talking with you. And It's been an eye opener. In any event, we need to all stick together to get this thing over with. So that's why I presented my ideas, and I'm sure some people will reject them. I'm sure some people might accept them. So I think anything at this point in time would be something to look at. You know. But thank you, and have a great night, Dr. Roy, and appreciate your input.
Well, thank you, Barry. I assure you I went through medical school. I wasn't contacted by the Rockefeller Institute or of any in any way, shape, or form. I think ultimately what you have to do is just take a look at the death notices. And unfortunately, you'll find that physicians tend to die also. They die of heart disease is the major cause. Cancers are the secondary cause. And you would sort of think that if it's all a trick we're playing on the rest of people, we'd at least save the good stuff for ourselves. So as much as, in a way, I wish this was all real and there was a magic kind of key that unlocks everything, and we could live a very long, healthy, vigorous life, I tend to not think that this is what's going on. But I will, if you send me if you email me the material, I will take a look through it. And thanks for participating tonight.
Well, the main thing I was saying was with the Rockefellers, the Rockefeller organization was, in the early 1900s, what they did was they funded a lot of the medical schools. So they actually set the agenda. They set the agenda for the new students in medical school to teach them how to deal with certain illnesses, things like that. You can get that on YouTube. You can check into that, how the Rockefeller organization actually influenced the medical association. And what they did was they were, at the time, getting rid of a lot of, they were making it illegal for home remedies to cure certain things, you know, old-fashioned memories that were passed down from generation to generation. And so, you know, it may be, I mean, you have a scientific mind, and it may be something that is worth looking into. I know it may seem like nonsense to you because you come from a different background. You're taught from a different slant, you know. But, you know, I'm not knocking your opinion or anything like that, or your approach to any diseases. I mean, that's the way you were taught. I mean, if I was brought up in another country and there was another religion, and someone preached to me about Christianity, it would seem a little foreign to me, you know. So I kind of get that, and, you know, I don't blame you for it, but, you know, there's no one magic bullet, but I think there are many, many different things that can be approached to remedy a certain illness. Well, anyway, have a good night, and, you know, tell me your opinions. Thank you.
Roy, you have another station trying to get in, Bob. Okay, Bob, you have a question or a comment?
Question?
Please, give me your question.
Yes, just no kidding around. Isopropyl alcohol you mentioned. There's another very popular alcohol. I was wondering if it has any value at all. And that's ethanol. If there's any possibility.
Ethanol is a perfectly good alcohol. You have to get it to about 70%. The problem is, if you're going to use something, say, from the liquor store, usually these things are under 100 proof, which means they're less than 50%. So you would sort of need to top them off with something else. But you can use ethanol, you know, roughly 60-70% as well to sterilize.
Thank you.
Net control.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I was wondering with the timing when you're talking about the alcohol, does I have a spray bottle that I put the alcohol in. Do I have to leave it on for a certain amount of time? Or, and with the gentleman with the punching in thing, let me drop. Should he put the Purell on before or after he punches in?
As far as the alcohol, I would tend to suggest that you rub it in and let it dry. Most of these agents usually are more effective if you don't wipe them off whatever surface you're using, if you leave a kind of a damp layer and let it air dry. And as far as the gentleman with the Purell or what have you, well, for his own sake, after, for someone who isn't doing it, in case he might be infected, God forbid, before. So you could make a case for both before and after, but definitely after.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? We're going to kind of shut this down soon because I don't want to eat too much into Paul's space report. But if you have a short question and you'd like to ask it, please do.
And to RPP.
Yes, and to RPP.
Well, I was listening to the thing with the corona thing. I was listening to all of it. I was just listening in. You know, I was supposed to go on a cruise. I mean, this messed up everybody, the whole world. Whatever plans any of us had, it screwed everything up. Do you think this will be resolved by the end of the year? And do you think with a vaccine, it'll prevent from other strains to happen so we don't have a repeat performances? Because this is going to do a number on the economy. I work with Suffolk Community College, and, you know, I think I'll be fine there because we're funded by the county, the state, and I'm in an essential position, RIT. I'm working from home. That's what I've been doing.
I'm just going stir crazy. I want to get out in the field again, fix the computers, but I can't do that. So I have a Surface Pro, and I just do whatever I can do from home. Back to you.
I understand. It's very difficult. People feel shut in and suffocated, and it's not fun, and the economy sinks, and it's a mess. Getting back to the questions, though, that you asked, unfortunately, there's no particular proof that a vaccine that would be effective for COVID-19 would be inherently effective for other varieties of coronavirus. There's been SARS, there's been MERS, and unfortunately, they never actually went to the trouble of completing any studies to develop a vaccine for those. In some ways, they've used it as a launching off point to develop vaccines better suited for COVID-19. So unfortunately, even if this vaccine is completely effective, it doesn't necessarily mean that another variety of coronavirus that's morphed and mutated into a pathogen for human beings would be as effectively treated by the vaccine. As far as how long before this goes away, hopefully, for the most part, a few months, but unfortunately, there are documented examples where things like this go on and on and on. Again, I hate to pull up the history book, but the 1917 to 1920 pandemic, obviously from the way I'm phrasing it, went on for 2.5 years and had two major peaks separated by a summer a pause. So you never really know, except with 2020 hindsight, when this mess is going to be over. We can all just hope for the best and act intelligently. Follow the advice of people who have trained and know their stuff and have dealt with epidemics before. And, you know, medicine and science is not simply recipes that people have memorized by rote. You have to understand that the whole fundamental concept of science is in a principle of test and retest and prove your principles from a fundamental to a more complex state. So no one in physics or chemistry or medicine simply takes it by rote. It's presented in a progressive, concise, reasonable manner that makes sense and that is proved by experiment after experiment. We're not cookbook people. We're guys who have at least innate understanding of some of the wheels and gears that make the...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Sorry about that. I got a little overwordy. Anyway, I thank everyone who participated tonight. I think it's a good thing to kind of air people's opinions and questions and try and supply answers as best that I can. I understand that there's a little impromptu net that runs 8 o'clock the rest of the week where people get together and mention, you know, what they've heard and what they're doing and how they're dealing with it. So again, I want to thank everyone who participated tonight, and I want to hand it over to Paul so he can give us his space report tonight.
ACT, yes, WS2N, very good, boy, on all of that. And, that net will be every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You can check in at 8 o'clock, and somebody will be on to discuss the tips and what you can do regarding the virus. But for now, we'll try to get away from that, get our minds off of that, and switch over to the SpaceNet report. We have there are launches, very few. A lot of them, of course, have been canceled. But the one that that will not cancel will be the one that goes up on April 9th to the International Space Station from Kazakhstan. And that will be on a Soyuz rocket. You have three crew members going up. You have three right now up on the space station, and they will be joined by two Russians and one American, Anatoly Vanishin and Ivan Wagner, along with American Christopher Cassidy. Christopher Cassidy has been up before. So they will be going up. They've been quarantined, as they usually do anyway, just in case there is any kind of a cold or a flu going around. They are automatically quarantined for a couple of weeks before they launch. And that's standard operating procedure. The difference is they won't have any visitors there. Their family's not going to be there. If they are home, they'll watch it on, on the computer. When they leave the facility that they're in now to go to the launch pad, they won't have any of the ceremonies that they normally have. Russians go through this whole big process before they launch. And that's, of course, all been canceled. Russians do have problems, and I understand they closed their borders yesterday. I think they're going to close the borders tomorrow. I think that was the report. So they're starting to have big-time problems. It's not going to affect the launch. They have to go up. Three people on board the space station, of course, they're doing fine. Just to prove how good isolation works, if anybody has any doubt, they do not have the COVID-19 virus, and neither do the three that are going to join them. Let me drop it. And they'll stay up there with them for a short while, and then the three that are up there are going to be coming back down. These three will stay on station for probably maybe 6 months or so. And they were hoping to have company. Normally you have a six-person crew on the space station. And they were hoping to have a company this May. I hope it still goes that way with the virus and delays and problems. The Dragon crew vehicle is supposed to launch for the first time from American soil, from Florida, on Launch Complex 39A. Same complex the shuttles have launched from, the same complex that the Saturn V used to launch from to go to the moon. Hopefully that goes off in May, but you never know the way things are going. If that happens, then they'll be joined by two other crew members. But the plan is not to stay for long. They just need to prove that a crew could go up there and come back down. They do have a possibility of staying up there a longer period of time, but I don't think that's going to happen. Let me drop it. Anyway, if the crew doesn't go up there, they're just going to have the three people up there. The Dragon crew vehicle from SpaceX does not launch. They'll have the three people for probably the next almost 5-6 months. And until they have another Soyuz go up and launch. And hopefully either Dragon gets operational, or maybe Starliner by Boeing gets operational. They are also building a spacecraft. Their first flight, they would actually bring three people up. But they've had quite a few problems Boeing has had with the Starliner vehicle when they tried to do a unmanned flight to dock with the space station. It didn't work out. They had some computer problems we discussed on the net before, and they're still working through those problems. They launched, and they came back, but they never docked with the space station due to computer coding errors. And that would be Starliner. So you have two crew vehicles that will be going up on a regular basis once once they get certified by NASA, you'll have the Starliner by Boeing and Dragon crew vehicle by SpaceX. Okay. There was an unmanned launch by the United States and also one by China. So military launches, if they're planned, they're not canceling them. Scientific launches are pretty much all stopped until they straighten this virus situation out. But they did launch last week on an Atlas V rocket, one of our biggest rockets, with five boosters attached to it to put a military satellite into orbit. And also China did the same thing, even with all their problems. They have stealth and crews doing this, but they did launch a military orbital mission for China. So hopefully our science missions get underway shortly. But according to Roy, it looks like it could be a while. With all the delays, let me drop it. Bigelow is he's a guy that ran hotel businesses for decades, and you know he got wealthy, and he's been developing inflatable modules to either attach to a space station or like the ISS or independently, fly by themselves, type of space station. You launch it up there and you inflate it, and you wind up with a large cubic area to work in. He's done this over the years, over the last, I'd say 20 years or so, back in 2000. I think 2007 was his first launch. He launched the Genesis 1, and I think 2 years later, the Genesis 2. He actually launched them from Russia, but it's an American company. They were just a proof of concept flights. The Genesis 1 would go up, and it would inflate, and they had cameras on board, and make sure everything worked out good. And since NASA did like the design, they contracted Bigelow to send the beam up. They call it the Bigelow Expandable Activity Module beam. And back in 2013, they launched on a Falcon. I think it was 2015, correction. They launched on a Falcon 9 rocket and attached to one of the modules, the Harmony Tranquility module on the International Space Station. They inflated it. It was a big deal. They made it, it was on the news at the time. And they inflated it. It looks like this gigantic ball. And big enough for people to go inside and fly around. They are now using it. They were originally going to use it for 2 years and then disconnect it and let it, deorbit. But they liked it so much, they NASA decided to keep it. And they use it for storage now. So crews could still go in there and there's no leaks. Things inflated. Still radiation proof. There's no radiation getting through this. They have radiation detectors inside. And it's a pretty remarkable piece of equipment. So Bigelow was planning on launching bigger inflatable modules, and they call them the B-330, I think it was called. 330 represented how big the, how many cubic meters were going to be inside these big modules. I mean, you could put it into space all by itself, and it would be around one-third of the size of the International Space Station, that you'd have that much volume inside with these modules. But because of everything that's going on, lack of contracts from NASA, Bigelow wound up laying, you know, if he had 68 people left, he laid them all off, so I don't expect them to return. So as far as I'm concerned, Bigelow is out of business. Hopefully they make a comeback in some form or another. Some of these companies are like submarines. They go down and maybe they'll come up with a different name or something. He's got a great system. It works. You've had people inside of these inflatable bubbles attached to the space station for years now. So, I mean, his plans were eventually to maybe even send these inflatable rooms to the moon or even Mars, land them on the surface, inflate them, and, you know, you have instant living space, you might say. There is another company developing similar technology, but these people have, you know, actual things that are flown in space. The other company that now has trouble is a company called OneWeb. OneWeb is a company that is developing broadband radio equipment for, you know, 5G and internet connections for Earth. He put all these satellites, I think he has around 70 or so satellites, once like 34 at a time, into relatively low Earth orbit, around 600 miles up. And he put a second batch up only last week, but now they're filing for bankruptcy. And I believe they've had some money problems before the coronavirus, so I don't think that's the catalyst that's making OneWeb fail. They might realize they're going to have tremendous competition from SpaceX with their SpaceLink, the Starlink system that they have, which is going to involve with, you know, thousands of satellites. He's already got 380 of them up there. He launches around 60 at a time. Many more planned for this year, and again with the virus, I think it's going to slow that manifest down quite a bit. But, you know, it's a long-term plan. He hoped to get it operational by the end of the year. I don't see that happening, though. Unless we get a miracle. That's the story with these companies that are starting to either lose money to the point where they have to lay people off or actually go bankrupt. Let me drop this WSUN. Are there any questions or comments so far?
Hi, Paul. KD2FIU, George. Just a comment, and nothing really to respond to, but understanding that 5G is a shorter haul signal, and it's going to require an incredible amount of satellites. So, to support what you're saying, that it's not just getting them up there, but who wants them up there? And nothing for you to answer to. It's just that 5G is a shorter haul signal. And great show, by the way. Back to you, Paul. KD2FIU.
Okay, George, KD2FIU, WS2N. And, yeah, well, that's the ultimate plan. There's going to be internet contact with all these satellites, you know, and there's going to be TV transmissions, and they all plan on 5G. I don't think this company was going to be able to do that. I know SpaceX with this SpaceLink system, they definitely have that on the menu. And by the end of this year, they hope to have, they were hoping to have like maybe 1,000 to 1,200 satellites up, and they could have brought online part of the United States and maybe part of Canada. And once they get all their satellites up, which is probably around 4,000 to 30,000 in the long run, it would be a worldwide system. All these satellites are connecting with each other too. You know, they're going to have all kinds of connectivity between one and another. So, you know, as they're flying overhead, they'll be transmitting to the other satellites. Let's say you're talking to London, and it'll do it that way. You know, it's not like you're going to set it up where you're going to link to that satellite, and the satellite's going to transmit back down to London. It might go to three or four different satellites before it gets there. So that's their plan. And all you're going to need is this antenna. It's supposed to be around 18 inches in diameter. You put that outside on your roof somewhere and just plug it in. And that's what he claims, you're going to be able to plug it in. And plug it into what, you know? I guess a modem. You probably have to have a modem, and, you know. I haven't seen any technical information on how he plans on doing this, but that's my guess. This is WS. Okay, with this virus, NASA has shut a lot of things down. Or having everybody work at home that can work at home, having smaller crews in whatever rooms that have to be, you know, occupied. So, you know, one of the things that they're doing is allowing private companies to use their supercomputers to see if they could use it to work on viruses or therapeutics for the virus. So, you know, NASA's got all kinds of supercomputing possibilities. So their offer is out there. Whether anybody's doing it right now, I don't know. Some companies thought, well, maybe they could build, you know, ventilators. So NASA said, well, you know, we'll help you design and help them, you know, do that, but they're not really set up as a mass production factory. So, you know, they will be able to help any company design or redesign existing equipment. NASA is putting themselves at the disposal of any corporation that wants to get involved. They would just contact NASA. So I thought that was pretty good. You know, they have plenty of personal protection equipment, PPEs and masks and things for themselves. Enough stuff for themselves. Anytime you see them working on rockets and satellites and, you know, putting things together, there's always, 20, 30 guys in a room with all this equipment. They don't want to contaminate any of the equipment that's going to be launched or, do any kind of damage to the instruments that they're working with. But they said whatever they do have, they'll turn over to, they'll donate, of course. But, you know, people think that they have this infinite amount of supply of equipment. Apparently they don't, according to Bridenstine, who is NASA's administrator. So that's the story with that. And let me just see if anybody has any comments. Okay, guess not. They call it a Vini satellite that's in orbit right now. It's in geosynchronous orbit. It's the one main communication satellite that Venezuela has. So the Vini Sat-1 is gone away. And they try to push to a slightly different location in its geosynchronous orbit. And apparently, either thrusters got stuck or something happened. And next thing you know, they found out the satellite isn't where it's supposed to be, and it's going into a elliptical orbit. But luckily, they had it high enough at the time when they were able to move it high enough, where the orbit that it's in falls short of hitting any of the existing satellites that are in geosynchronous orbit, and not by much, I say 50 kilometers, or, you know, like 30 miles above the most dangerous part. If they were 30 miles lower, they could possibly eventually hit her. an operational satellite, and the Apogee is much higher. So they don't really have a problem. They are trying to communicate with it. It's presently located roughly near Venezuela. They own it. It's operating, operational for them. They are unable to get a hold of it, and keeps drifting further west. And after a while, it's going to go so far west that they won't be able to communicate with it, and all chances of bringing this satellite back under control will be lost. And that will leave Venezuela with no geosynchronous satellite. And they had one plan to go up to replace this one, in a very short distance from now of time. But unfortunately, this is a worldwide virus that's kind of knocking everybody out of business. So that's what happened to Venezuela. Let me just drop it, see if anybody has any comments.
KD2FRU, Paul.
To rocket launches. There's a star called Betelgeuse, and it's one of the popular stars in Orion. And for some time, for the last couple of years, they've been talking about Betelgeuse possibly going supernova because of the change in brightness, and they believe that that's the sign that, this thing could possibly explode. It wouldn't really cause any problems with Earth, but, you might have something that was very bright up there that's unusually bright that you would not normally have. But now they're thinking maybe it's some kind of a debris or clouds in front of the star. They're looking into there's apparently some kind of spectrometry they're doing, and it's possible that this thing might not explode. So I know that was on the net a couple of months or maybe a year ago, talking about Betelgeuse possibly. Yeah. Going stupid over. Now I think it might not. Some kind of a cloud debris of hydrogen atoms or something in front of it that they're working on that they didn't expect. Betelgeuse is a massive star. I mean, it makes our star look like a teeny tiny thing. Let me drop it. Only one own. One other topic here. And that's it. And it has to do with the helicopter that's going to be flying to Mars. One of the missions that has not stopped, they have a very small crew working on it, is the Mars rover for 2020. As you know, we have one operating rover presently on Mars called Curiosity. This one kind of looks like Curiosity. It's a little bit bigger. Not by much, but same type of rover. It has a RTG, a radioisotope thermoelectric generator to power it, so it's not solar panel powered. It's got all kinds of a dozen different science pieces of equipment on board to analyze everything. But we've talked about it many, many times, and they plan on attaching a helicopter to it. So this helicopter is going to be on the bottom of it. So when it comes out of the aeroshell as it's coming down to Mars, the first thing you see is wheels. But underneath that will be this helicopter. It's all folded up. After it lands, the wheels open up, and it lands in the rocket pack that's flying above it, the sky crane, they call it, will fly away and get away from the rover. Eventually, the rover will move to a safe place, and eventually, it will deploy this helicopter. And it's a huge. The blades are huge. The helicopter is small, but the blades are 4 feet long. It's two blades. One one spins clockwise, the other one spins counterclockwise. You know, one is mounted right above the other one. And then on top of that, there's a solar panel. And that's what they're going to use to recharge it, the lithium-ion batteries, every time it does land. So hopefully this experiment works. I remember a couple of years ago they were talking about doing it, and they had to prove that the helicopter would fly. They took it to an edge, extremely low atmosphere on Mars. I think it's 0.1 percent of the same pressure that you would feel on Earth. So they did that, and that's why these blades are so big. They're like 4 feet long. And they're going to spin at 50 RPMs. So it's moving pretty good. And this electric helicopter will be ready to go. I'm looking forward to seeing it go. Rover now has a name. It's called Perseverance. And, they had school children write in essays, and they looked through them all, and they had a competition, and this one school kid, they liked his essay, and they liked the name that he chose, and it turns out it's now Perseverance. So Perseverance has a name. It also has it's built, you can see pictures of it already. It's pretty much built. It's got all the six wheels on it, and it's got a cross member going across on top. On top of the cross member, they have a plaque that they have just installed. And on the plaque, they show a sun in the middle, and then radiating out from the sun, they one side and Mars on the other side, so the opposition of one another, and then. Just to the one side of this plaque, they have three little squares. On those squares, they have a little over 10 million names of people that sent names into NASA. Oh, eight months or so ago, I think you had to be. Probably a year ago now, and then you had to have your name sent in by September of last year. And if you did, they had this electron etching gadget that wrote all the names of all these 10 million people on these three little tiny squares. Each little square is maybe big as your thumbnail, maybe a little smaller. So, anybody that sent that in, including me, my name is now officially on the Mars Perseverance 2020 rover. And me and some other relatives that signed up for this thing. And it was pretty good. NASA emailed you a boarding pass, you know, like you're going to get on, and you hit your printer and you get your boarding pass. So I'm ready to go. That's it for the net. Any comments, questions, any questions dealing with the SpaceNet report for the TechNet? This is WS2M. Back to Roy. We'll be here tomorrow night. They always, we always have the club info net on Monday night at 8:30 on both repeaters, so you can hear us there. And always good to check into that, whether you're a member or not. They take all check-ins. Over to you, Roy. AC2GS. This is WS2N. For the SpaceNet report for the tech.
Thank you, Paul. KD2FIU.
Thank you, George.
I second the emotion, Paul. Thank you for the space report.
As always, I want to remind people, if you have any questions, TechNet type of questions, and you can't get onto the net, or any topics you want discussed, or any science topics you want discussed, hopefully when the virus net can be retired. If you want to relay a message to Paul, you can get me at my email. I tend to respond rather quickly. And it is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Links to articles from tonight are available on my link page, roy.ac2gs.com. Again, roy.ac2gs.com. And again, if you have friends who will want to listen in and they don't have a radio or they can't reach us, I offer an audio stream on the Internet. Just point your browser at technet.ac2gs.com. And you can listen along with everyone else. And a little addendum, I actually looked up that Mutato thing, and I put it up on my link page. Apparently a little bit too good to be true. The story amounts to a story that was published in a local Jerusalem newspaper from a company that kind of overclaimed things. It would be sort of like if the cure for all cancers came out of the Daily News or the Post. They promised last January that they would have it available for clinical trials in a year. It's now more than a year, and their site is very mum, and they make a point of telling people that they have no actual physicians or doctors or ability to test anything. They're all just a bunch of PhDs working on research and development. So I would not hold my breath for the Mutato. If anyone else has any questions or comments tonight before I shut the TechNet down, please feel free. Okay, very well. I want to thank, as always, Paul and his space report and his participation. I want to thank everyone who participated tonight. Without you, I would just be talking to myself, so I really do appreciate it. And in closing, I want to share a bit of wisdom from one of the wisest men that I know of, Dick, K2RIW, and that is to be kind to each other. Be safe. Don't panic. Don't get depressed. Just be aware of what's going on and take a rational step to limit your risk. So I wish everyone a happy and a healthy and a safe week, and I hope you'll be able to come back and join me next Sunday night for the next installment of the TechNet. This is AC2GS Roy here, and I'll be going clear.